Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I just wanted to try to fool you there into thinking that maybe you accidentally restart the program. And if I fooled you, fooled you once, shame on me. Fool you twice, you can't get fooled again. In the words of the late, great George W. Bush. He's not late. He's always on time. No, I misspoke. He's late. Late's a very gentle euphemism, isn't it? It's like people who cannot really come to terms with such a harsh word as death, dying, decay, morbidity, gone, absent, silent. You know, there's a lot of words that we use that are just nice words. The word nice is so nice. When I say it, I kind of grit my teeth a bit because I think I have some judgment on that word. Oh, he's so nice. Oh, the weather's so nice. Not to be unappreciative of nice weather. I mean, God, nice weather is great because it's safe, you know? It means that there's not a typhoon coming or a tornado or hurricane or something that completely devastates so many lives. But nice can also be quite a neutral word that doesn't really mean much these days. It sort of loses its meaning. And I think it's also because people, whether they're lazy or whether they don't have the time or whether it's just not their forte, they don't utilize their vernacular as much as they could. You know, there are thousands upon thousands of words that you can just look up in a dictionary and replace the word nice with something a little more specific about what you're talking about. And hey, even if with whom you're speaking. Oh, geez, I'm going to do that. I don't know. I don't know that grammar. My mom's good at with when you use who and whom. But even though whoever you're speaking, whomever with you're speaking, if they don't know that word, well, great. Now they've learned a new word. Now you've contributed to their education. You know? It's not like you're trying to teach them or anything. It just happened naturally. So let's describe the weather. You know, I was watching this movie. What was it? Oh, it was The Book Thief. And someone who hadn't seen the weather in a long time, they said, "What's the weather like outside?" And she said, "Oh, it's nice." Or maybe she said, "It's snowing," or something to that effect. Anyway, he said, "No. No. Let me see it through your words." And I think that's one of the amazing things that writing artists can do. People who either write songs or poems or stories, speeches, dissertations, grocery lists. You can really visualize what you want the person to see. You can really let it come to fruition. And there's something about that, something that's just amazing. That I'm looking at a stack of books that I have. Books, which are these pages that are tightly taut together, binded. They have these symbols all over them in a uniform manner, written in ink. Just these symbols that, because of the life that I've lived, because of the education that I've received, because of the world that has happened thus far, because of evolution, because of culture, because of history, because of love, because of regret, because of circumstances beyond our imagination, we can read. We can look at that, those binded up pages, and systematically utilize it. You start on the first page and you go to the last, if it's a Western book, and you go from left to right if it's a Western book, and you read words on one line, you know, the first line, and then you go to the second line, and you go to the third line, and it's a seemingly easy process, but it's nothing but. It's taken us years to be able to do that, and I'm not just talking about years from, you know, from birth to when a child has the ability to read, when they learn those skills. I'm talking about from the beginning of time. It's so advanced. It's so amazing that we can do that. And that I can just pick up this book. Here's a book right here. Henry Miller, Tropic of Cancer. And it's it. I'm holding it in my hand. It has weight. But on top of that, these words that were written by Henry Miller, they took so long. They took a lifetime to be able to write. It's like that quote. No, it's not a quote. It's a little story. Picasso is in a bar late in his life, and he draws a little doodle on a cocktail napkin. Someone says, "Hey, how long did that take you to make?" He goes, "This? All my life." And I think we realize that everything builds on top of one another. And it's not ever for naught. We might not yet know where it'll all meld together. We may not know what experiences we have when we're younger can attribute to becoming the person that we are. It might take us decades to learn a lesson. Say, "Well, I think I'm just beginning to understand that." You know? But it's fascinating. I think I've said the word fascinating before. And now I'm thinking, what's another word that I can use instead of fascinating? What's a word that's not in fashion that I can pull out and will describe exactly what I mean? And that's certainly a skill, to be able to paint so vividly and so specifically in such distinct and direct strokes. You know, writing is not that different from painting. It's not that different from playing the violin. It's not that different from any number of skills that require your imagination. And I think because books have become every day, they've become something that are just around us, are just there, we've forgotten how incredible they are. I can't remember the first book I read that I was really just lost in and I didn't want to stop. But I know that I've had that feeling before reading a book. You read, you feel the right side of the book getting lighter and lighter and lighter, knowing that you're reaching the end, knowing that your journey with these characters in this story are going to end.
That sound was my phone ringing. And then what happened may surprise you. Instead of turning off the phone, continuing the podcast, I stopped the podcast, picked up the phone, and spoke to my friend for a good 2 hours. Then I went to bed. Then I got up, made myself a non-vegan protein smoothie because the almond milk that I wanted to use was all used up, not naming any names. So I had to use milk, regular milk, which is fortunate that I bought regular milk. I guess fortunate's a stupid word when it comes to things like that. I mean, it's fortunate that I can eat at all and drink vegan protein smoothies. Anyway, I put a little bit of, winter blend coffee grounds in there from Trader Joe's. Fantastic. Did I say fantastic? No, it was fascinating. That was the word that I was hung up on before. Fantastic. So good. You know, it just has that little hint of, I'll say it, it tastes like Christmas. You know? I grew up celebrating Christmas. Not religiously, but commercially and familially. It was all about family, you know. It still is. Even though technically I would be Jewish because my mother's Jewish, I was never bar mitzvahed. I guess I never became a man. No, I guess I grew up on my own terms, you know. And I still have a really strong connection to my Jewish side, I feel. I do want to learn more about it, you know. I think it's fascinating. No, I do, though. I don't necessarily know if I want to convert, so to speak, or, you know, attend synagogue regularly or even, you know, abide by the laws of Judaism, but it would still be pretty fascinating to learn about the history of which some of my ancestors hail. It's funny because my great-grandfather's name was Nathan Hale Seidman, named after Nathan Hale, And then, of course, my grandfather, of course, like you're supposed to know this information. My grandfather was Bertrand Russell. And I'm sure there were others that were named after literary figures, but it must be amazing to be named after a literary figure. It must be amazing for that literary figure, especially if they were still alive. You know, I know that it's an interesting thing to sort of put so much weight onto one person like that. I mean, I know people that have named their pets after famous authors, like, hey, George R. R. Martin, come here, boy. You know, it's like looking for this, like, cat that's, like, in the corner, like, meow. Don't bother me, I'm writing a fantasy series with catnip. Of course, catnip is somewhat of a hallucinogenic for cats, so you give them catnip, they think they're doing anything, you know. Well, don't bother me, I'm finishing up the third installment of Game of Thrones. It's gonna be a hit. I can sense it. Okay, George R. R. Martin. How do I understand what you're saying? Plot twist. I'm also on catnip. Catnip, I guess, doesn't do the same for humans as it does for animals. That's interesting. But it must be sort of amazing. I mean, you know, if an author were able to sort of look on to the future and say, wow, I affected this. I really made some sort of a difference, whether it was someone naming their cat after me or a street or some sort of college fund or some award, you know. In your field, you made a difference. I've always wanted to be a farmer. I think I would be outstanding in my field. That was a joke. That's a good joke. That's like this joke my friend Al told me. He said, termite comes up to a bar and says, is the bartender here? I like those kind of jokes. You know, those are the same kind of jokes that someone who would name their offspring after important literary figures would either make up or they would understand right away. I just think that maybe I'm just cut out for highbrow humor. Although I did discover Vine recently, and that is the stupidest humor you can think of. It's essentially you edit together these 7 minute long little films, little videos, and you can make as many shots as you want. You use your iPhone and you press the screen for however long you want to record it, so there's no overlap when you're editing it together. That it doesn't, you know, you just use what you got. And if you jump cut enough times to enough ridiculous things, then it's just, oh, it's crazy. And then I looked up, like, the best vines. Like, some people have these stop-motion animations that are just incredible. And some people have done the most wondrous things. Like, they'll take, like, some sort of building in London or wherever, like, St. Peter's or... St. Peter's in Rome? St. Paul's. Maybe I'm thinking of St. Paul's. And they'll just, like, you know, move around it and take a photo every however many feet. And it looks like they're just... It's like a three-dimensional view of the building. It's amazing technology. And that, for us, is like what books were like for people in, I don't know, the 1700s and 1800s. You know? It's like, wow, I can't believe this story can come to life through the words on this page. And now it's like, wow, I can't believe this story can come to life through me pressing a screen and capturing a moment. So it's just interesting. It's interesting what we consider cutting-edge technology these days. I'm sure Gutenberg considered the printing press cutting-edge technology in 1440 whatever, whenever he invented that, you know? And now this podcast is somewhat cutting-edge technology. Well, thanks so much for listening.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.